This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Here's the story of a lovely lady who was bringing up three very lovely girls. All of them had hair of gold, like their mother, the youngest one in curls.
It's the story of a man named Brady who was busy with three boys of his own. They were four men living all together, yet they were all alone. Till the one day when the lady met this fellow, and they knew that it was much more than a hunch, that this group must somehow form a family. That's the way we all became the Brady Bunch. The Brady Bunch. The Brady Bunch. That's the way we became the Brady Bunch.
BFM 89.9, it's 7:38 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. Doing the show in a way that actually mimics more or less the opening credits of the Brady Bunch.
We are like boxes on a screen right now.
And so many of us have been over the last year. I never realized it, but I didn't expect to find a moment of connection with the Brady Bunch in a Zoom pandemic. But anyway, so we opened with that clip because today on Popcorn Culture and our Supercut, we want to talk about family and how shows and movies like to explore them as characters and use them as like storytelling jumping off points. And for a time, I think sitcoms in the United States really, really capitalized on this. You know, you had the Brady Bunch, you had the Munsters, you had so many family types that you could refer to just by surname alone.
I think if you wanted to define what each era of television was like, you could actually do it by referring to particular families. The Brady Bunch themselves is very interesting because it comes in the 70s, right? So we're using them now as sort of like a twee idea of family drama. But they were very revolutionary when they came out because of the idea of people remarrying and of blended families. So I think it's great how you can actually look back and look at all the different types of families that we've seen on screen and how different they've become, you know, and things like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or The Cosby Show and what they each represent about a particular moment in time in history.
Yeah, but at the same time, don't let that song put you in the, you know, give you the wrong idea, like the Brady Bunch and stuff. I mean, we're talking about families in all shapes and sizes. So we're talking about the weird ones, the bad ones, the dysfunctional ones, which are the more entertaining ones on screen, I think, especially over the last maybe 15, 20 years. We've had a lot of dysfunctional families. So when we say like we're talking about famous families on TV and movies, we mean the famous ones, but we also mean the ones that are difficult to define because of how messed up they are.
The famous and the infamous, right? I think is one way to think about it. I do think that it's interesting also to apply our current lens and look back at these sorts of shows because, of course, there was a time where they were in many ways reinforcing traditional ideas of what it means to be a family. Dad comes home every day at 5:30, but mom has been home the whole day and has a roast chicken on the table ready for everyone to share.
And looks beautiful.
Yes, correct. Looks immaculate. The family unit stays very tight. And so I think that watching the ways in which we've shifted that idea of what looks like an acceptable family over time and who gets to be represented on television is also kind of interesting because we are eventually going to come to talk about Modern Family. And I think to compare Modern Family to Brady Bunch, there's a pretty direct through line, but the way they get there is quite different.
So I wanted to ask you guys what your first memory of a family on TV was.
I think it has to be Addams Family. It's either that or it's The Simpsons. I can't remember which one, but it had to be something made for kids. So it's one of, or maybe the Flintstones. Now I'm like, now I'm starting to so like expand.
Yeah, I was just going to say Jetsons or Flintstones, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And they're very much mini sitcoms anyway.
Yeah.
Nobita's family, guys. I don't understand this whole, you know, leap immediately to Flintstones. For me, it's 100% the theme song, the Buloh Terbang, all the rest of it, and Nobita's family, which again had a very specific view of what it means to be a Japanese family, a Japanese middle class overworked family, mm-hmm. you know, trying to make ends meet with their robot cat.
See, I like that, right? Because you're right that now that I think about it, I say Flintstones or Jetsons, but I was watching Indian films since I was, before I can even recall watching TV. So, and ideas of family in those are very different from the families that you saw in Hollywood. And somehow I think Hollywood painted this like really rosy picture of what families were, especially that sort of sitcom. Like as you said, Lynn, dad comes home from work, kids are all happy. Mm. And even when things go wrong, the worst you get is something like Full House, where everything is still pretty great.
Yeah, for the most part. But I also feel like, because you mentioned in the beginning how Brady Bunch was sort of revolutionary in the way that it opened up to new concepts that was sort of new at the time. I feel like a lot of these shows, a lot of the successful shows, will sort of design a family and on purpose throw something that's weird in that family that is slightly ahead of its time, just to send a message, just to talk about something very special or very unique. Maybe not stuff like Home Improvement that is very like surface level, maybe not stuff like According to Jim, but things like My Wife and Kids were slightly different for its time. Even being sitcoms, there were themes in there that were not as vanilla as they seem.
I want to also address the fact that I think a lot of these shows actually deeply reinforce stereotypes and how that can be both good and bad, I suppose, because of course there are such things as positive stereotypes. The word itself gets a bad rap, but that's not necessarily what it encompasses. Because I'm just thinking about something like Everybody Loves Raymond, right? Mm. Which really had the most tiresome cast of characters in the world. And you had both women kind of always put, both female characters always put in the position of being a total nag, the men being reluctant social, people who are reluctant to socialize and kind of slobby. And so it really reinforced this idea. I'm not sure whether it was to comfort people who perhaps saw echoes of their own relationships in these shows but exaggerated it for laughs, or whether in some ways it fit into larger patterns around comedy. I don't want to sound too nerdy, but I think that for a while these were huge comedy tropes, and I'm glad that they're not really around anymore.
So shows like Everybody Loves Raymond is credited with perpetuating not just stereotypes against women, but also stereotypes against men, right? The idea of the inept dad, the idea of the inept husband, the idea of the man who isn't capable of anything really and needs to be taken care of by everyone in his life, these are not ideas that are good for anybody.
Yep.
And even though they were played for laughs at a particular point in time, when we look back now, you can actually see that looking at the kinds of conversations we have now about feminism and equality and so on, those kinds of examples have actually done a lot of damage because they become such a big part of your life.
Do you think they knew that when they were designing the barons in that sitcom? Do you think they understood the stereotypes, or were they doing it purely for jokes? Because I feel like, you know, like 15 years later, we look back and it's sort of not easy, but it's easier to do it in retrospect. But when they were writing the show, were they just doing it because it was a 90s show, because people found those things funny and it's not funny anymore? Or did they know exactly what they were doing and they took that risk?
I think they were picking the easy laughs. It was easy to laugh at these things.
Low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
We have a message from Josh who says, Full House. Not sure if it was mentioned, but I also loved Martin Sheen in The West Wing.
Is West Wing a family?
There was a family.
The first family. Yeah. But Full House, 100%. And that was also very progressive at that time, right? Single dad, you know, uncles all raising the kids together. The old Full House, at least, not the
reboot. The old Full House, yeah. Not Fuller House.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to close off this segment with a little bit of Little Women and the March Sisters. And I want to revisit this a little bit later, first, I think let's just hear the screaming and the fighting. So I'm warning you ahead of time what the clip is going to sound like. Let us know, you know, who are your favorite families on screen and why? Who are the ones that have resonated with you, that have stuck in your mind? Do they live on film or on television? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, here are mostly Joe and Amy.
Has anyone taken my novel?
No. No way.
Amy, you've got it.
No, I haven't.
That's a lie.
No, it isn't. I haven't got it. I don't know where it is, and I don't...
Tell me! Oh! Make you
I burnt it up!
Marvin!
I burnt your book. I told you I'd make you pay, and I did!
I'm sorry, Joe. Amy.
It's just that the only thing you care about is your writing. And it's not as if I could have hurt you by ruining one of your dresses, and I really did want to hurt you. I am the most sorry for it now. I'm so sorry.
Oh, Joe. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. Forgive her. Help each other. And you begin again tomorrow.
She doesn't deserve my forgiveness. And I will hate her. I will hate her forever.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
They're creepy and they're kooky, mysterious and spooky. They're all together ooky, the Addams Family. The house is a museum, when people come to see them, they really are a scream, the Addams Family.
Neat. Sweet. Petite.
So get a witch's shawl on, a broomstick you can crawl on. We're gonna pay a call on the Addams Family.
BFM 89.9, it is 7:50 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin and Sharmila. We're talking today about our favourite families on screen, whether it's on television, whether it's in film. That was, of course, a little clip of the Addams Family. Before that, we heard the March Sisters and Little Women. And before we talk about Addams Family, I just wanted to go back to that fight, because I think the beauty of Little Women and the reason why it's resonated with decade after decade, generation after generation of people is because, A, if you've ever had a sibling of any type, that's what that sounds like. If you've ever had a sister specifically and you've never had the fight of, I wanted to hurt you, then I don't know. I don't know what to say.
Listening to that clip sounded like fights that my sister and I have literally had. I remember her stealing my diary at one point, and yeah, that's mm-hmm. exactly what happened. I mean, I didn't then later try to drown her in a lake, but yeah.
I don't know what it is about watching arguments on screen, like watching them go on and on. Marriage Story does the same thing. You can just, they're so compelling for some reason, watching two people fight and argue and use words against each other. It's not nice, but it's entertaining for some reason.
You know, we spoke yesterday about the Roys and Succession. Oh, yeah. And them fighting is pretty much my favorite thing. They engage in physical battle, they do verbal battle, and just all of it is great, layers upon layers. But yeah, what about Addams Family, though? I remember it both as the animated series and as the movie. And in both cases, I could never quite look at Uncle Fester. I don't know about you guys.
I liked Uncle Fester more in animation than in... Like, Uncle Fester real was a lot. It was a lot to sort of look at. But, I mean, the delight of an Addams Family is that they are so weird and yet they are nicer than the quote-unquote normal people around them. And that's what the whole show was about. The Munsters was pretty much like that too. And I just love Addams Family. Everyone in that show is so unique and so likable. I love the movies. I haven't revisited the TV show in quite a while, but I've rewatched the movie, the first movie at least, quite a number of times, and I love it. Christina Ricci's a delight as Wednesday Addams.
It's perfect. Yeah. Like, she was born for that role. So I always thought Addams Family was a cartoon first. That's the first thing I knew about them. And then as I got slightly older, I found out that there was like an old TV show. The song we just played, the opening theme we just played, was from the first TV show. And then I found out that there were movies. So Addams Family is one of those things where it sort of expanded as I grew older and had like a bigger view of the world. I'm like, oh my God, there's more to this than I understood. So it wasn't just like a cartoon for me. It was like cartoon, and then it was like old TV show. Then
the
it was
Addams
like
universe.
Movies. The Addams Universe. And then there was like a new Addams Family last year, I think, which I haven't seen. The 3D animated one.
Oh, yes. It didn't do very well, though.
Yeah. But I think people just like that family as a union. So they just keep going back again and again.
I just wanted to give a shout out to the perfection that is Angelica Houston and
yes.
The fact that she spawned off a zillion Halloween outfits over time just by being so perfectly Morticia. Mm-hmm. And I think that the lesson from Addams Family and the reason why it works, aside from the fact that it's macabre and weird and, you know, for children's entertainment and most, you know, when I just did a quick Google, right, when we were planning the show, when you type family and movie or best families on screen or whatever, all you get are recommendations for family films. So films that are good to watch with your kids. Mm-hmm. And I think Addams Family totally falls in a gray area because it is about family. But it's also one of those things where it's so odd that somebody thought that this would be appropriate. and yet it's so appealing.
It's for kids. I think that's what starts it. It's for the weird things that kids like.
Mm.
Like creepy, but not horror, squishy, slimy, weird
yeah.
things. It's I think primarily made to appeal to children's sensibilities, but with a smartness mm-hmm. that adults can get. And I think it just hits that exact balance of hitting both of them.
Yeah, I don't think kids see it as macabre at all or even as dark. I think it's the same way you'd see like a Tim Burton film. And it's amazing that Tim Burton didn't make The Addams Family. It's one of those things that should have happened but never happened.
And now you don't want him to?
And now you don't want him to. But like back then, like he was not even associated, I think. And like looking back at all the fun stuff that I watched growing up, Count Duckula falls under the same bracket. I think Addams Family was like that in the sense that as an adult, you see the quote-unquote gruesome parts of the show, but as a kid it's just like it goes over your head.
Cousin It was the original Sadako.
I just want to point that out.
But I also think that the reason why Addams Family works is because fundamentally they are a family unit. They talk about that. They're very tight. They support one another in their initiatives, such as murder. And so I think
the parents are deeply in love, aren't afraid to show
deeply
it.
Deeply in love.
It's a really, really tight family unit, guys. It's a great marriage. So I think that's kind of, it goes back to what we talked about earlier with Brady Bunch, right? The thing about family is that that old saying about you can't choose them. So I think the beauty of a lot of these shows is that they throw you in with people who are like, if given a choice, I probably wouldn't want to be with you, but we're here now. And that brings us, I think, to Arvind's earlier point about dysfunctional families, because they, in some ways, offer the most interesting storytelling opportunities.
So every time you say dysfunctional families, and I think these are going to keep coming up, I always go back to 6 Feet Under, because for me, that was the one of the earliest shows that I remember watching where I was like, oh my God, this family is so messed up. Mm. But each of them are not bad people in and of themselves. They're just so dysfunctional and they're so damaged. And that question of not being able to choose your family, it's so stark. And yet they're somehow forced to function together. I think beyond being great entertainment, sometimes it really speaks to something that many of us feel. Because increasingly we live in worlds where we can say I don't like seeing my family sometimes,
mm-hmm.
But we don't know quite what to do with that. And sometimes watching that play out on screen helps a lot.
Yeah. When you say dysfunctional, I think of Game of Thrones. That's just the first thing that pops up in my mind. And that whole series is based on like families who don't know how to be families and don't know how to communicate with other families. It's just a bunch of families fighting with each other that created like 6 seasons or whatever it was.
Murdering each other.
And murdering each other and murdering other families. So that is like peak dysfunction. And I don't think it gets worse than that. Other than Succession, which we spoke about yesterday. So those are my two favorite dysfunctional families. I also think, like Lynn said, they have more opportunity to teach things or to open up to bigger lessons, because I guess you can get good moral stories from families that function well, but you get bigger moral stories from families that aren't afraid to do things that normal people wouldn't do.
Also, so much of it comes down to, I think, a lot of unresolved stuff people have with their parents, because fundamentally, a bad parent, right, always serves as such a strong basis for a good story. And I think that we're going to see that in the clip that we're about to play, which is focused on Wes Anderson and the Royal Tenenbaums, which the titular character, Royal Tenenbaum, is kind of a world-class bad dad. And that's really what prompts the beginning of the story. We want to know who your favorite families are on screen, whether it's in television or in film. We're getting some really lovely recommendations, which we'll get to right after the 8 o'clock news. In the meantime, though, we are going to be closing off this bit with a celebration of the really aesthetically pleasing dysfunction that are the Royal Tenenbaums.
There were 3 extraordinary children in the Tenenbaum family.
I should sell it, yeah.
Chaz Tenenbaum was a financial expert and started buying real estate in his early teens. Margot Tenenbaum was an acclaimed playwright and won a Pulitzer Prize in the 9th grade. Richie Tenenbaum was a champion tennis player, ranked 2nd in the world by age 17. They were brilliant. They were famous. They were unlucky enough to be the children of a man named Royal Tenenbaum.
Are you getting divorced?
It doesn't look good.
Was that our fault?
Obviously, we made certain sacrifices as a result of having children, but no, Lord, no. Thank you, Pagoda. Well, I'm on my
way. Now, for the first time in 22 years...
I hear you're dying.
Ooh, how are you going to last?
A month, a year? I've got 6 weeks to set things right.
They're all living together under the same roof, in harmony.
I love you more than anything.
Can't somebody be a jerk their whole life and try to repair the damage?
You probably don't even know my middle name.
That's a trick question. You don't have one.
Helen.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
What are you doing here?
These two knuckleheads were fighting each other.
What?
Could have been worse. I was not ready to face Dirkus today.
So what happened?
Well, apparently there was some name-calling and shoving on the playground. By the time a teacher separated them, Luke was sitting on Manny's chest.
Luke, that's not like you.
Wait a minute. You're Luke's father?
Grandfather.
So Manny's father is...
Javier. Crazy guy. That's where he gets his fire.
Okay, you're...
He's our son.
And my grandson.
I'm his daughter.
So you're...
His uncle. Stop saying that or I'll sit on your chest again.
Oh, wait a second. Is that what this was all about?
He keeps calling me his nephew.
You are my nephew.
Shut up.
Okay, hey. Okay. Luke. I'm getting the sense that you're all related somehow. So it's probably best if you work this out at home so the boys can go back to class, okay? But we're not happy about this, boys. This is not how mature young men behave. Here's your note from Miss Passwater.
BFM 89.9, it's 8:08, and you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin, and Sharmila. Together, we're talking about families, the family unit, and how it gets conveyed on screen, whether it's on television or in film. And that was Modern Family. And, you know, we spoke earlier about how it can be very easy looking back to, I guess, look with a lens of nostalgia at things that actually normalized a lot of radical things at the time. And Modern Family is a strange example of that because it's pretty recent. It just ended its run. Was it last year, the year before? I think the year before. And so it's 10-year run. And there were so many things in it that were actually kind of radical that got put aside by the fact that it's also a very warm and cozy and cuddly and feel-good show. But that ignores the fact that it had an LGBT couple front and center. They went through adoption. There's a lot of things in there.
It breaks a lot of stereotypes. For instance, the older man and the younger woman and the gold digger stereotype, for instance. So it is. And I think it has to do with, you mentioned 10-year run. I think the great thing about shows like these is that by their very being and their the length of time that they're around for, they normalize the thing that they came up with in some sense. And I think that's great, because the fact that what they once brought in as radical then becomes just, yeah, so what? So two dads on screen. I think there's something really nice about it. And that's something that you only see on TV, really.
Yeah, we just heard like one kid call the other kid his nephew. So that's just this Modern Family in a nutshell. That's the gist of it. For me, it's just the believability. Like you can have all these like radical concepts and it can be ahead of its time and you can try to deliver all the messages. But I feel like if you cannot believe that these people are in a family, that they could be in a family unit, then the whole show falls apart. More than all the ideas and more than the modernness of Modern Family, I just like that they behave like every other family that you see. Like they have their squabbles, they have their issues, they fight about the smallest things and the biggest things, and even the way they fight, even though it is a sitcom, it's meant to be funny, it's comedy, at the end of the day the themes and the resolution is very family-like. It's grounded is what I like.
There's a real tenderness also to some of the stereotypes that it breaks through, right? So, fine, if we don't want to look at the more sort of politically radical stuff, there's the fact that you have a type A person in the form of Claire who's grappling with the fact that she does not actually want to be this person. She's just kind of been pushed there. And you have Phil Dunphy, pretty much one of my all-time favorite TV dads, kind of playing with the idea of being a hot mess, but never really being that. You know, he's a fantastic father. He's a really great partner. He's very present. He's also just kind of completely ridiculous and very funny.
Phil Dunphy is also one of my favorite all-time TV characters, actually. And he is in one of my favorite episodes ever of all television, Man on Wire. And I think that kind of encapsulates everything about him. And he's the exact opposite of what we talked about earlier, Raymond, right? Because it shows you that, yes, men struggle with these things, but he's also such a believable character. And Ty Burrell plays him with so much heart that you... If you knew a person like him in real life, if a person like that was in your family, you couldn't help but love them.
Yeah. I guess the chemistry between the characters on Modern Family sort of makes you wonder, like, do members of a family function or work without their family units? Because if you design like Phil Dunphy, and you sort of create him to be in this family, right? And he's by definition a family guy. Not family guy, but in Modern Family. But, you know, like, are they as compelling without the members of their family? Like, is Luke Skywalker as compelling without Darth Vader? Or is Simba as compelling without Mufasa? Is Will Smith as compelling in Fresh Prince without his family?
You know, like, you were going to say without Red Table Talk.
Without Tommy Lee Jones. Yeah, so do they work? Like, do they work as like individual characters?
That's interesting.
I think for the purposes of our discussion, no, you know. The whole point of a family, and the reason why I think there are some that we are going to be sidestepping. So we spoke last week about plays and August Wilson, and, you know, I think that In plays, for example, or in some stories, there's one outstanding character. There's the broken mom. So, like, Mommy Dearest, I would not necessarily consider within the context of our conversation. I think it has to be families where everything is coming together and they get to play off each other's angles and edges, and that's what makes it good.
Yeah, so all of the examples we've played so far, you would be hard-pressed to pick who's the outstanding lead. There isn't one, because they couldn't function on their own, right? Whether it's Succession, whether it's Adam's Family, we might have favorites and those favorites might shift as you go along. But the beauty and the power of that comes from the ensemble cast. And I think that's the difference between a movie about a family and a movie that just happens to have a person with their family around them.
Which is why I think spin-offs don't always work, because you separate them from their family unit and then everything just falls apart and they don't become believable anymore. Friends, they're not a family in Friends, but they operate like a family, very much like a family, which is why Joey didn't work, because you took him away from that unit, right? Which is why I asked, like, could it work or could it not? And I honestly, like you guys, I think it can't. Like, if they are designed to be in a family, then they have to remain in that family until the show ends.
So we've been asking for favorites, whether it is in TV, whether it is in movies. And I think quite predictably, we are getting a lot of television because that's really where families live. And Wisely says, for me, definitely Family Ties and The Cosbys. One more that was best in the 80s, Silver Spoons. And so I've heard of Family Ties. I've not watched much of it, but I always like the idea of a young Republican Michael J. Fox. Cosby's, of course. Silver Spoons. Do you guys remember that?
No, I actually don't know Silver Spoons. I'm trying to Google it as we speak so that I can see if I recognize the picture. I recognize the poster, come to think of it, but I've never watched it.
Same, never watched it.
But I think the other recommendations are at least... they are great and they capture that whole prickly but warm and cuddly family dynamic on TV we're talking about. Redden says, Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, Little House on the Prairie might actually be one of the first family things I remember watching. Laura Ingalls and her sister and the dad. And that's a classic, but a good one.
And one of the most family things. Like, it's so driven by nothing but family.
I mean, you're in the prairie with your family.
You say there's nothing but family.
Can I take, just before we move on to the other messages, right? Do you think a show like that is still something that we would want? So we heard Little Women earlier, and that worked because it's a standalone film. It was done so beautifully, and it was very warm, and it has such a strong source text, right? Everybody knows Little Women. But Modern Family, even in its time, there wasn't really another one that was like it. And I wonder whether we're still interested in shows like long-running TV shows that are primarily about family and feel-good factor.
Do you mean like in a sitcom format or it could
be... I mean Little House.
So I would like to see a Little House, but I feel like the time for just warm, sweet television is almost gone. We reviewed Babysitter's Club last year, and that's the closest anything has come to something like that. I feel like now these days... There would need to be some kind of edge to these stories. Not because I want it, but that's what's expected almost.
So my closest comparison to that would be This Is Us. And This Is Us is one of the warmest, sweetest shows that I've seen in like a long time. It's very nostalgic. It's something that came out in the 80s. It's like something that came out in the 80s. But at the same time, it does take place in like the city and they're like different characters. So a lot happens. It is very soapy at times. So I don't know if that's accurate. I know that there's this other show called Virgin River that I haven't seen. I watched the pilot. I didn't continue. But I know that's making its rounds. And that's about someone who moves back to her old town, which is very Little House. And it's sort of like this, it's very remote town away from, you know, kind of disconnected. And then stuff unfolds and drama happens. But I think that would be the closest. And it is doing pretty well. So I think there is still space and room for stories like that.
Maybe post-pandemic, people would want a little bit more positivity on screen.
Is that something that you would want to see? Do you want to see more family shows? And I don't mean shows for the family. I mean shows about family that have families at their heart, right? You can let us know and let us know your favourites by WhatsApping 018-789-8899 and tweeting us at BFM Radio. Just to close off this bit, we have a WhatsApp from Lok that simply says, The Simpsons.
We've got to do better as a family. So tonight, we're not going to shovel food in our mouths while we stare at the TV. We're going to eat at the dining room table like a normal family.
Happy, Dad?
Yes.
Good. Commence shoveling.
No. We're going to say grace first.
Okay. Rub-a-dub-dub. Thanks for the grub.
Ah! No! Ignore the boy, Lord. Now can a chatter and bow your heads. Dear Lord, thank you for this microwave bounty, even though we don't deserve it. I mean... our kids are uncontrollable hellions, pardon my French, but they act like savages. Did you see them at the picnic? Oh, of course you did. You're everywhere. You're omnivorous. Oh, Lord, why did you smite me with this family?
Amen. Let's eat.
No, I'm not done yet.
But Homer, how long are we supposed to sit here and listen to you badmouth us to the man upstairs?
I'm sorry, Marge, but sometimes I think we're the worst family in town.
Maybe we should move to a larger community.
No!
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
Oh, that's where you were all night.
What the hell were you doing in the bathroom all night?
Nothing.
Alt-right troll.
Liberal snowflake.
I don't know what any of that means.
It means your son's a little creep.
Oh, my son's a creep.
Guys,
just... Oh, you know what, Richard? You want to go?
You bet, Skippy. Let's go.
You want to go? Come on.
Oh, hey, no, no,
watch out.
Oh, my God.
You got to do this more often.
Hey! Jacob. You were in the bathroom next to Harlan's office where he had the fight with Ransom. Now you heard something. Spill it.
I just heard two things. My will. And then there was more yelling. And then I heard Ransom say, I'm warning you.
Ransom? What's that mean?
I think it means our father finally came to his senses and cut this worthless little brat out of his will. So I guess you're gonna have to sell the Beamer and give your notice at the country club and kick whatever fashion drug you're on. Because if you think that after all the bridges you burned, after everything that you put this family through for the last 10 years, that any of us are gonna support you, that any of us are gonna give you, like Dad liked to say, a single red dime, you're nuts!
BFM 89.9, it's 8:21. You're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. We're talking today about families on screen, whether that's TV or film. And that was just a little bit of, man, rich people have different problems than us. That was Knives Out.
I mean, you mean not all of you have grandparents who are crime novelists who might or might not leave their fortune to you?
Yeah, it's so relatable. This whole story. Also, like, if you want, like, family drama, just throw Michael Shannon in there. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll bring it.
So this just proves what ripe setting family is, right? Especially when you throw in that extended family, the hangers-ons, the ones who used to be there but now are exes and all of that. Because Knives Out is basically a murder mystery. But because it's set within this context of this messy, loud, creepy family, it just heightens the drama so much more.
I think
because they know each other so well.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Just the premise of it, like, oh, a murder has happened and then they have to figure out who did it with family members. Like, it's bad enough if you have to figure these things out with, like, strangers, crime thrillers and stuff. We spoke about Manhunter, you know, that was difficult as it is. But when you throw, like, family members in there, it just gets 10 times worse. Like, just listening to that clip, right? And I think that's why the movie works so well, because it's not just, it's on multiple layers. It's like one layer is just you can watch it purely for family drama, and then secondly you can watch it to see how they figured exactly what's going on.
Yeah, it's such a great example, mostly because you have a really stellar cast. I think that helps. We spoke earlier about the ensemble cast, right? And Knives Out really has super strong performances, and they're all doing their best to be the most unpleasant versions of themselves, and it's just it is great. On to the messages. We have Su Yang saying, shout out to Malcolm in the Middle for Unconventional Families and Family Guy, if such shows are allowed to be discussed here. Haha.
I loved Malcolm in the Middle when it used to be on. It's one of those shows that I haven't revisited, but... you know, it does that thing where it's told from the point of view of a kid, and then, you know, you have the three boys and then they're just crazy. It was such perfect sitcom material.
So Family Guy is interesting, right? Because as much as I love that show, it's not a good family show, because I don't think a lot of people care for anyone other than maybe Peter. Then you care for like Quagmire and Cleveland, who are the neighbors, not even his family. So it's not like you care for the whole family unit. Really good show. I don't know if it works as a family show. What do you guys think?
You're right. I mean, we played Simpsons earlier, and I think Simpsons is a much better example of that genre, the adult animation, because Family Guy to me is character driven.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily family driven. Whereas The Simpsons is really a show of a particular kind of family. Again, very revolutionary when it came out, because it wasn't about a perfect family. It was about a very average family that lived in an average not nameless, but sort of could be any suburban area in the US. And they were all just kind of little messes in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Ken Ling says, for movies, I still resonate with The Sound of Music as a family movie and a movie about a family. For TV, there was a short-lived cartoon named Bionic Six. This family of six had four children from different racial descents, which shows that this was ahead of its time in terms of promoting diversity.
So diversity is actually, I'm glad that someone brought it up, because one of the issues that we had while we were planning for this show was also that so much of television and film, because it's skewed white so often, it's only fairly recently that we see more of this. I mean, sure, we have The Fresh Prince, Family Matters I used to love with Urkel and all that. But it's only recently that we're getting more interesting and maybe more layered stories of diverse families on screen and what they look like. Crazy Rich Asians, of course, is the one that had the biggest name. But there's so many other examples of Never Have I Ever, which I wasn't a fan of, but still was a big deal for the South Asian community.
And also Umbrella Academy.
So
that's a good example of a family that isn't actually a family. So they say that in the pilot. They're all adopted. They're all from different backgrounds, but they work as a family unit. Umbrella Academy also makes me think of families that are on screen but not on screen. So the shadow of that family is around. So one of it is like these quest films where they go off on quest to find their families, but you never really see them up to the end of the movie. But it's also about their family. The other one is stuff like, just like Batman, who is defined by his family. Anyone who's anyone knows what happens to Batman's parents. You know what I mean? So it's that character doesn't work without his family, but we never really see that in the films. It's never about that per se.
I just want to point out with what consummate skill Arvin has brought up in one show, Luke Skywalker and Batman.
I know.
just
throwing it in
there.
I
snuck it in there.
I agree with all of that, but I also wanted to say that with Sound of Family, right? A Sound of Family, that would be raucous and horrible. With Sound of Music, I just love that mention because it's such a classic choice, and they really do move as one. You know, that decision is made collectively. You see a new mother figure joining the family and being folded in with such grace, and I think that's just such a great example. We're getting so many messages, so I'm going to run through them. Rish agrees about Family Matters and also says Supernatural, which is also about family, two brothers, which is interesting. Sarah says F is for Family, anybody? That or Rick and Morty?
Well, I've never watched F is for Family, but Rick and Morty is they're so dysfunctional.
Yeah.
They're so dysfunctional and I don't know if they ever get some sense of resolution, but you like them so much.
Dysfunctional, but don't you want a time-traveling grandpa
who can
like, you know, move through dimensions?
Maybe not one who abandons me so often, but...
I mean, at the expense of the time travel and dimension warping, I'm okay. Like, abandon me once in a while, I'm fine.
I mean, we've already talked about how great dysfunction is for storytelling, so why complain about your abandonment and your granddad? I mean, come on.
That'll just make for a great biopic down the line of how messed up I was because of it.
About the family.
Yes.
See?
We also have Elma who says Boy Meets World, Twins, and Look Who's Talking. Are those family movies? Do they count?
Twins, of course. I didn't know I had such hidden passions for the film, but I love Twins. Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito have such great chemistry. And I think it's
and they look alike, so you can't tell them apart, you know?
Yes,
so well done.
That's why it's called Twins.
Exactly.
Casting directors have been so confused by them for years and years. I think Look Who's Talking is so interesting because it's such a deep down, right? It's a really surreal movie. Like the whole series, they're incredibly surreal. They're so odd. I mean, I'm not going to go into it, but the way the films start is really where babies start. And so just the fact that we have that on screen to watch, I can't speak to whether it's the essence of family, but I think that they're so odd. And the idea that they were ever made is kind of amazing.
I think they also spawned a whole run of things that shouldn't be talking in adult voices but are. Because until you mentioned the opening, I was struggling to remember whether I was thinking of the right movie. But when you said it, the picture appeared in my mind. I knew what you were talking
about. Stuff that I erased and then I remember again. Is Home Alone a family movie?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Yes.
But also with the absence of family and abandonment and murder.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dysfunction, guys. We return to that.
Yeah.
Siva Kumaran says, me and my mom rejoiced at the return of Little House on the Prairie and the nanny on Astro. Mr. Sheffield screaming, Miss Fine, would always get us.
Nannies. I loved, I don't know whether he's talking about the table read of the script that they all did as the pandemic was in its early days, but it was so lovely rewatching it.
Nanny kind of bends the definition of family, right? Because she's technically in their family, even though she's not part of their, not related by blood.
And then eventually she becomes a part of the family.
Yeah.
But it's also all of those. It's very similar to Sound of Music in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kitty says, is Friends considered family? And we touched on this earlier because the answer is no, except that you see throughout the run of the show that they are so much tighter with the friend unit than with the actual family members because they do drift in and out. But Kitty goes on to say, for me, yes. And Mum, who watched some episodes while I watched, says, these people are so close. They're like family. I love that. I can never get enough of the series. So many things in the show resonate. Also, how come no one's mentioned Phua Chu Kang?
Nice.
Phua Chu Kang. Yeah, yeah. Wait, wait. But Chup, Friends is technically family because Ross, if you take Ross and Monica and then you get, you have Chandler in there. So kind of...
They eventually become family.
They become family.
Well, I also wanted to say that Friends is actually one of those interesting shows because you can see when the family unit on TV became less fashionable and sort of graduated on into shows like Friends and Big Bang Theory.
How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah, yeah. So actually the Friends as a family unit, because it reflects people moving away and sort of starting their own lives in different places.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you could stretch it to say it's a new kind of family.
Yes, and then we come back to Modern Family. So I think, you know, we spoke earlier about how you can see these different eras of sitcoms, right? And so just as we started off with Brady Bunch and Happy Days and the like, and then you saw moving away from that into, no, let's talk about urban kids, although Friends really hardly counts as that, and then cycling back to the suburbs. So you do see those shifts of main characters. Now, I wanted to get to this. So Sue says, I think we need family shows without the swear language. The family structure of love and respect is under tremendous pressure and threat. Maybe we could help parents by showing these values of honor and respect. We could help our children know that help and understanding are closer than they think. Help can come from parents and siblings. These are not old-fashioned values. They are sorely needed when our children stay in their rooms and parents are crying for help from counselors and psychologists.
I just wanted to say Modern Family I think we have a clip, Blackish, because these are some new shows that, and I get what she means. I don't want dysfunctional families all the time. I do want that warmth and sweetness. And I think we can play the clip first and then we can talk about why Blackish is such a great example.
Bo, we have a problem. Junior is a Republican.
Well, that's okay.
What?
So he wants to shop at Banana Republic. They have a crazy generous return policy.
No, no, no. You're not getting it. All right? He's a Republican.
A notary public? Well, that's a noble profession. Will save us tons of time.
Bo!
Hmm.
A Republican!
A member of the Irish Republican Army?
What the?
Okay. Heck? Okay. So if you gotta take down a couple of fish and chip shops to be free of British rule, Dre, you gotta do what you gotta do.
No! Ronald Reagan, Ann Coulter, Fox News, Tea Party, go! Republican!
Republican?
Yes!
No!
Yes!
No!
Yes!
No!
Yes!
Just a little bit of the inimitable Tracy Ellis Ross there.
Blackish, and I think we were talking about Modern Family earlier. These are all examples of how it is possible, I think, to be funny and edgy, but also warm and provide that family base. And particularly important because Blackish is about an African-American family, and it's about an African-American family that came from working class roots. But by the time we see them, they are at they are sort of upper middle class. So you have all of these layers of class differences and race issues and generational differences. And they bring it all together, though, with so much so much sweetness, really, that I think it's, I haven't watched all of it, but I think it's a great example of a good new family show.
Isn't it also what we spoke about in the, at the top of the show, we said how Brady Bunch was sort of ahead of its time. It's that thing, right? Like, shows have the responsibility of showing you certain things and they can shape the way you think, especially if you watch it when you're a kid. So I think that's what Sue is talking about. It's, you know, you don't want dysfunction to be the norm, even though it's fun to watch them. That shouldn't be the only kind of families we see on TV. There should be room for like other, not wholesome, but functional and families that want to deliver like a moral message, I think.
The structure of the sitcom is perfect for that because just like family, it's always there for you. You know, it ends. No, but you know what I mean?
No, but I like that.
It always wraps it up. It ends supporting you as a viewer. You're not supposed to watch a sitcom and feel like the world is crumbling around me. That's for real life. So, you know, the sitcom gives you that the way families should, I think, which is why it's such a good fit. Sue also goes on to say that anyone mentioned the Waltons, and actually nobody did. So thank you for bringing that up. Lau Sayu says, Dynasty, Gilmore Girls, contrasting
Very different shows. Gilmore Girls is great, but Dynasty, I think, actually my parents used to watch it when I was a kid, and I remember being so invested. They were the Succession of that era. That's the best I can say.
Didn't go on for like decades or something?
That's Dallas, I think.
That's Dallas. So they grew up like on the show.
Well, I know that they watched Dynasty. I don't know how long they watched Dallas for.
Okay.
But both are sort of about these rich but really messy, messed up families.
Locke has another great one, which I feel a bit ashamed that we haven't brought up yet, which is The Wonder Years. and then Teddy brings up Dallas, Dynasty, Simpsons is perfect, The Greatest Family Ever, Sesame Street. And Grey's Anatomy was a great family, which is interesting because they're kind of dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. I think that show doesn't have great parents, I will say. But and Happy Days. Just to close it off, Kenling is back to say Nanny is a family movie. Then Mrs. Doubtfire is a good movie. And Danny says Married with Children, followed by Ha 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 for quite some time. Guys, we are talking about a classic here.
So Married with Children for me was the first sitcom I watched with that thing that's become quite common now with the husband and wife just sparring and going at each other. Again, I know I've said revolutionary a lot, but in the 80s, that was also quite a big thing to do that on TV in the same way The Simpsons did the whole, well, families can be like this. They're not always happy and cheerful all the time. I think Married with Children did that. Like, parents like this can also be good parents.
And it's also like super rewatchable. And I think that helps. So, you know, parents can show it to their kids or their kids can watch it when they are growing up and stuff, right? So it has that rewatchable value. I don't know if kids want to watch Married with Children, but...
Well, but the dad from Married with Children is Jay in Modern Family
In Modern
now.
Family,
I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so you have those connections. And that rewatchable value, I think, helps a lot to keep these shows going.
Edna also wants us to mention Frasier, which I think is a good one in terms of having the cranky but also the oddly intellectual. You know, we haven't brought them up yet, which is fair. Okay, that's it from us, really. I think overall, I think families in film and in TV will continue to be a thing. I guess I'm interested to see where it can go. Because whenever we look back, right, like as we've been doing through the show, you see these moments where different types of families get normalized, blended families, adoption. And I would be really keen to know what a 2020 family in film would look like.
I really want to see... So when you asked, do I want to see A Little House on the Prairie, one of the things that came to mind, and I think this kind of solidifies it for me, I want to see more stories like these set outside of America, particularly outside of the West, and told with that same kind of closeness and the same kind of, not as an outsider looking in. So Parasite,
and not tiger parents.
Yes, yeah, not a stereotype, but more stories set in these settings, families that I don't know enough about that I want to know more of.
So for the time being, my family fix, I brought it up before, but my family fix is This Is Us. I think it's like one of the best shows I've seen in a long, long time about families. So I'm okay, but I would like to see more shows made like that, or more like classic sitcoms. I don't know how well they would fly, but if they wanted to make them, I would watch them.
Arvind, you reminded us yesterday, I think, that Kim's Convenience has just dropped.
Kim's Convenience had just dropped, yeah?
Yes, season 5, right? So mm-hmm. that's going to be my thing. I'm super excited to see. I think it blends that old-fashioned quality of it being a nuclear family, a secure like parental unit, but also lots of intergenerational drama. I just, you know, it's very enjoyable. That, plus it's funny. Okay, keep those recommendations coming. Who are your favorite on-screen families? We want to know. We want to watch them. It's very clear that we enjoy them. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, and write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.